All right, so we've got four cases today. I'm sure a lot of y'all have done this before, but just for folks who this is their first time, we have a stoplight system. So we've got green for go, yellow for you're almost done with your argument, and red means that your argument time is over. So once the red light comes on, please wrap up your argument. If we're asking you questions, you can obviously answer those questions, but otherwise you should wrap up. All right, so our first case today is United States versus Kenneth Menninger, 25-10073. And so for the appellant, we have Ms. Ray, and for the appellee, we have Mr. Hunshide, Sheed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. South Carolina officers violated Kenneth Menninger's Fourth Amendment rights when they searched the contents of his electronic storage cards without first obtaining a warrant. S.H., who owned the home in which the cards were found, did not have authority to consent to the search as a third party because she did not share common authority over those cards. Nor could she be said to have apparent authority because the police in that circumstance were under no misapprehension of facts.
Well, even before we get to whether or not she had the actual or apparent authority to permit the officer to review what was on those cards, we don't have to agree with the district court, do we, about whether or not your client had a reasonable expectation of privacy? If he has no reasonable expectation of privacy in those cards, case over, right?
Correct, Your Honor. He did have to have a reasonable expectation of privacy, and we argue that he, in fact, did, and that the district court correctly determined that.
We don't necessarily have to agree with the district court, though. I mean, when you take into consideration, he placed the cards in a shared room that was frequented by others. The cards were out of his control. He didn't take any precautions to avoid their discovery. The cards were not password protected. And he revealed the cards' contents when he admitted to his ex-wife that he wanted to film her daughter's 18-year-old friend. All that's true, right? They weren't password protected. Were they?
They were not password protected, but in these circumstances, the lack of a password is not as relevant as in some of the case law cited by the government. Specifically, those cards, I would highlight two things. First of all, they were closed containers. They did definitively belong to him. No one else claimed to have any possessory interest in them. So he had a property interest in those cards that he brought into the home. He was an invited guest in the home. And the courts have said that invited guests have a right to privacy within the home of their host.
Well, we have a case, United States versus Thomas. I believe the case was cited in the briefs where we upheld a third party's consent to a warrantless search of a computer left in a common area of a home that was not password protected, and we said that the defendant in such circumstances assumes the risk that the matter will be discovered.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think the differences in Thomas serve to highlight why that is not the case here. In Thomas, the individuals were a man and wife. They were a couple. They lived in the home together. And the wife consented to a search of a home computer that they both shared. It was in the evidence that they both shared the computer. They both used the computer. It was in a common area of their shared home. And in that instance, that's where the password protection became more relevant because the husband, the defendant in the case, was aware that his wife had access to the computer and had mutual use of the computer and yet did not take precautions to password protect the information that he ostensibly would have wanted to keep safe.
Let's assume this was not an electronic card, but go back to your box hypothetical. I mean, let's assume that he had taken a box of, you know, crime evidence into the house, and he had left that box in the bathroom And the bathroom is shared with these girls. You know, the owner of the house can go in the bathroom. What's the argument that he has a reasonable expectation of privacy in that box if it's just a box of stuff sitting in someone else's bathroom?
I would answer in two ways, Your Honor. One, I would point to United States versus Salinas Cano as one example of that circumstance. It's a case outside the district. I believe it was the 10th Circuit that found in that circumstance a defendant left a suitcase in the home of his girlfriend. And the facts showed that although he stayed there several nights a week and had belongings there, one of which was the suitcase, he nevertheless was a guest, and the police did not have authority to search based on the girlfriend's third-party consent.
I guess forget about the consent aspect of it. Just go to reasonable expectation of privacy, right? I guess so. Mm-hmm. So if this box were in the room that he was staying in, right, that he was invited to be in, that was his sort of quasi-private space within the home, I think you'd have a much stronger argument that he has a reasonable expectation of privacy. It seems to me that the twist here is that the sort of hypothetical box is in a bathroom that's shared by multiple people, right? Was that case? Did he leave the suitcase in like a bathroom space that was shared with multiple people?
It's not clear precisely where it was. It just noted that it was among his things.
Right, and he stayed there several nights. I mean, so here he's invited for like a holiday. He's given a room. I mean, I know your position has got to be that the fact that the box is in the bathroom doesn't matter. I guess I'm just trying to figure out why that doesn't matter, given that there are these cases that say that when you leave something in like a common area of an apartment complex, for example, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Why would this be any different than that?
For a couple of reasons, one of which is the heightened expectation of privacy in electronic devices. As far back as Riley versus California, the Supreme Court has said there is a heightened expectation of privacy in such devices by virtue of the enormity of information they contain, much of which is highly personal, social security numbers, highly personal information in the case of a cell phone, text messages and whatnot. And the officer, investigator Brian, did testify that an SD card such as this also is capable of containing all manner of data. And in fact, it contained 192 gigabytes of data, which is more than 10 times the amount of data the average cell phone contained when the Supreme Court determined that in 2014, according to the case itself. So there is a heightened expectation in this instance.
Okay, what if it were a box?
If it were just...
Yeah. So go back to my hypothetical of you leave a box of crime evidence in a bathroom. You're visiting someone's house for Thanksgiving. You leave this box of crime evidence in the bathroom, and then you leave. What is the reasonable expectation of privacy in that if it's a shared communal space within the home?
Again, I believe... what's more relevant is that it's clear that the box is not a shared space. And so certainly if I were to go to a guest's home and bring my purse or my phone or a box, and I left it in a room of the house, in any room of the house, I certainly would have an expectation that it would not be rifled through. Moreover, here we have not just the idea of the family looking into the box, but them allowing the police to look into the box. And that's a giant leap. And that's a important distinction. The district court did find that the small portion of the cards that Minor One did look at that showed her and a friend watching a movie, he had lost his expectations.
You're moving to whether or not the wife had the... either the apparent or the actual authority to consent to the search of the box, assuming that there was a reasonable expectation of privacy, but the camera was in a shared bathroom and it was her house. It was her house, and her daughter found the cards and agreed that law enforcement should be called. And again, it was not password protected. And so why doesn't that give the wife the at least the apparent authority to a consent to a search, assuming that there was a reasonable expectation of privacy?
Well, speaking specifically to apparent authority, that only exists where the if there is actual authority, apparent authority could only exist where there's a mistake of fact. And here, the officers were aware of all the salient details that not only did the cards specifically belong to Mr. Mininger, but SH had specifically disclaimed ownership of them. And she was not even aware of them until Minor One found them that night. And he had brought them into the house with him with that expectation of privacy that comes as a guest in the home. And he had license to be in the home. He had unrestricted access to the home. So he wasn't doing anything that violated his access to the home. Obviously, there's an indication that there's evidence of wrongdoing.
There's evidence that he was coming back? Was he coming back?
No, Your Honor. When the cards were found, S.H. instructed him to leave the house. In fact, she did so three times and said very affirmatively that she was holding on to the cards, despite his attempts to regain them.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've saved some time for rebuttal.
Good morning, and may it please the court. John Hunscheid on behalf of the United States. Unless the panel prefers otherwise, I'd like to start with the reasonable expectation of privacy issue.
Was that issue properly preserved by the government?
Your Honor, this court can affirm for any reason that's in the record and supported by the record. So even though the government didn't object to the report and recommendations findings, this isn't a cross appeal. The government.
And have we ever specifically said that when the government fails to object to finding in a report and recommendation, that issue is not waived? In fact, don't we have a local rule that says a rule 3-1 that says that it in fact is waived?
Your Honor, it's waived as to an appeal. So the government would not be able to appeal that issue, but that doesn't mean that this court can't decide to affirm on that basis when the defendant has appealed that issue. And to answer the second part of, or the first part of your Honor's question, I don't believe there's case law that interprets that rule either way in this context that would explicitly preclude the court from doing so here.
Okay. Go ahead and make your argument, assuming that it's been preserved.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Mininger here hid hidden cameras not just in a common area of the bathroom, but also in a minor's bedroom, a place where the homeowner testified he had no reason to be. Under those circumstances, he couldn't reasonably have expected the contents of those cameras and SD cards to remain private in this situation. I think to Judge Brasher's question, the grounding of the expected privacy interest is in Minnesota versus Olson, and sort of the general proposition that guests have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the items that they take into the home. But the whole logic of Minnesota versus Olson just simply doesn't apply here because it's grounded in the notion that a host typically will not go through a guest's personal items, even if they're in an area outside the guest's traditional exclusive control. But here, what we have are USB cameras or USB chargers that are concealed with a camera inside that are placed in areas of the home outside of the exclusive control or even usual control of Mr. Mininger. And under those circumstances, it would be very reasonable and expected for exactly what happened here.
Yeah, here's something that I'm trying to figure out. You mentioned Minnesota. So what's odd to me about this case with respect to the usual case is here the argument is that the guest committed a crime against the person who invited him in, right? And so it just seems, I don't know how this really fits within the rubric of reasonable expectation of privacy or apparent consent, but it seems like it's a relevant fact that the homeowner was concerned that they were the victim of a crime by the guest and was reporting that crime to the police and saying, please look at this evidence that I found in my home. Like how does that fact fit within the sort of the rubric that we have about reasonable expectation of privacy and consent and that kind of stuff.
Yes, Your Honor. I think you're exactly correct that that is a relevant consideration here. I think it factors in the sense that when these devices are placed in the areas where they are placed and they are uncovered by the homeowner, the defendant can't reasonably expect that that person is not going to look at the contents of that item. So while that's not the rule I'm proposing or suggesting isn't necessarily that you commit a crime, you lose your expectation of privacy, the fact that the conduct here made it more likely that the contents of the devices would become exposed to the public is absolutely relevant to the expectation of privacy analysis. And that goes back to like the most fundamental principles of the Fourth Amendment here, which is that an area or an item that you expose to the public is not constitutionally protected. That goes back as a fundamental principle as far as cats. And so that's how I would suggest, Your Honor, that that factors in here, is that the nature of the conduct here made it more likely that the item would be discovered and viewed by the homeowner. Again, undermining the entire rationale behind the Minnesota versus Olson understanding that guests have a reasonable expectation of privacy in their items in a host's home.
What if he had, let's just hypothetical on this reasonable expectation of privacy issue. What if he had, this evidence, let's just say it's a box, just to make it easier. It's a box. It's in his own room, right? So he's invited into this house. He's staying for the holidays. He's got a box of crime evidence. He's like, I want to make sure I've got this box with me at all times because it's a lot of evidence of my crimes. And he keeps it in his room. Would he have a reasonable expectation of privacy then?
I think in that instance he would, Your Honor, because he hasn't exposed it to the public. I think that's the key fact for the reasonable expectation of privacy analysis, which he has a closed container, which no one would have a general right to look at. It's not self-evident, it sounds like, from Your Honor's hypothetical, what the contents of that box are from the outside. If it had a yellow crime scene tape on it, that might be a different hypothetical. Mm-hmm. But I think under that fact, that's distinguishable from this case.
So if that's the case, then what really matters here is that he put this in the bathroom and the girl's room, right? Is that the key fact?
I think that's one of the key facts. I also think the nature of the container here is a key fact, which is that it's self-evident what it is once it's discovered what it is. When the minor discovered this in her bedroom, she understood that it was a USB charging block, and then she saw a little pinhole right above where you would plug the USB cord in and realized that doesn't look right. That's not what a USB charger typically looks like. And so she plugs the SD card into her computer. So I think that's also a relevant consideration, the fact that where the item is placed, which is in one area that's completely outside of his control and in one area in which others have as much access, joint access, as he does. But it's also relevant, the nature of the container itself.
What if it was password protected? I mean, I don't know a whole lot at my age about these sorts of things, but there's a way to protect that information with a password, right?
There generally is. There's nothing in the record here that indicates whether this device could be used with some sort of password protection and still be functional. So I just want to be clear about that component. The record's silent on that. But generally speaking, Your Honor, you could password protect a hard drive or encrypt it in some form or fashion. If he would have done that here, I think that would have at least raised the expectation of privacy analysis significantly, because he would have a reason to believe it would remain private even if it was found. But in this instance, it was found, but he had no reason to believe that it would remain private.
Yeah, so I mean, the analog would be something like, you've got a closed box with a lid on it, which is what he had, but you could also have like a box with like a lock on it, which is what he didn't have, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. To analogize it to the Fourth Amendment analogies that we typically use, I would suggest that the court look at this as a unlocked closed container. Mm-hmm. Right, it's a suitcase or a trunk, but without a lock on it, with the exception that it's not just a sort of innocuous container, right? It's a container that's...
I take your point about the nature of the container, which differentiates it, I think, from what your opposing counsel was trying to say with regard to a heightened expectation of privacy in these sorts of electronic devices, because it obviously wasn't a cell phone. And I think the nature of the container is relevant. But I do want to get your thoughts on the scope, right? Because the point at which they discover that it contains over 100 gigabytes of information, they know that the daughter looked at a portion of that. Is it reasonable for the police to look beyond that?
Well, Your Honor, we're not trying to argue the private search doctrine here. We agree that the government exceeded the scope of Minor One's search. So that's not an argument we are trying to advance to ask the court to affirm on that basis. We agree that the government exceeded the minor's search. And so we're not trying to justify the law enforcement search based on a diminished expectation of privacy, solely based on the fact that the minor searched part of the SD card. This court's precedent
says. Your argument is that the minor could have searched everything if she wanted to, because there was no lock on it.
Absolutely, right? Your Honor. It's that an objectively reasonable person wouldn't view those contents as private.
Can I ask another question on this? And this is my last question about the expectation of privacy point. One weird thing about this, too, to me, is that the videos on this secret camera were of people whose privacy was being invaded. So, you know, if you look at the context of what he was keeping on there, it's not as if he was keeping his own financial documents or some kind of like something where some kind of information that you have some privacy interest in. I mean, he's keeping pictures of girls changing in the bathroom and just, you know, I think probably there were just videos, innocuous videos of people just standing around. Like what, how should that have anything to do with our analysis? I'm just trying to figure out how that should matter.
Yes, Your Honor, and we're not trying to justify post-ante what was on the SD card and say that's how the court should look at it. But that goes to the nature of the device, which is, to Judge Pitt's point, this is not a cell phone. It's not, to use the parlance of Riley, something where you would expect there to be a digital record of every aspect of a person's life. This is a functional memory device that's attached to a particular instrument. And while it's certainly like theoretically possible that other information and data could be contained on it, that's not what is the reasonable assumption under this case. What's reasonable to expect is that the SD card contains contents that were captured by the hidden camera. It's almost analogous, even though the storage capacity is significantly larger, to a roll of film that's in a camera. We know what's most likely to be on it in that case.
I mean, I do think an SD card is a little bit different than a roll of film, right? Because a roll of film can only be used in a camera, whereas an SD card could be switched to a cell phone or some other electronic device, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. It is qualitatively different, but it's the point I was trying to draw from the analogy is just that the placement of the memory device itself gives some indication of what its contents will be, which distinguishes it from when somebody comes across a cell phone or a traditional computer hard drive and looks at it, where you don't have any indication necessarily from the device itself or the device into which the memory is placed what the contents of that thing will be.
Could you just assume that, unless anybody else has questions about the reasonable expectation of privacy, I mean, let's just assume he did have a reasonable expectation of privacy. What's your best argument that the homeowner had authority to give the cops this stuff and tell them to look at it?
Yes, Your Honor. So the authority is grounded in Matlock, which is that she has a sufficient relationship to the item. So this court's, it's an unpublished decision, but decision in Marchante, and then I think the Eighth Circuit's a very similar back pattern and Bermel are the best authorities that the court can look at. But essentially, what I think it shows is that this court has said in Thomas that the hallmark of the doctrine is assumption of the risk, right? And that when a defendant places an item in a common area and does not take steps to exclude others from it, then that person has assumed the risk that the third party in that same area will consent to the search.
Yeah, that seems, that seems more like a reasonable expectation of privacy argument. I mean, I realize that we sort of cast that as a consent argument in Tom, but that seems more about reasonable expectation of privacy. I mean, like here, the homeowner says, this is not my thing, right? Like, I don't own this. I, in fact, know who owns it. It's this other guy. but I would like you, the police, to search it. That does seem like a problem to me under saying that she has the authority to do that. Like, what would be the basis? Like, if I found your briefcase and I was like, this is not my briefcase, it's that guy's briefcase, I'm giving the police consent to search it. That seems very odd.
Well, Bauer says that traditional property interests aren't what control the third-party consent analysis. Taking a step back, though, I do agree with Your Honor that there are overlapping concepts, right, between the reasonable expectation of privacy and the ability to consent. That assumption of the risk language comes up in both cases. And so they are similar. This court's precedents have treated them under similar rubrics. But her authority, well, first of all, I want to point out that in Merchante, the third party disclaimed ownership, and that fact was not taken as dispositive. In Bermel, obviously, the cameras that the minor victim found in that case were not hers, and the court did not look at that as dispositive. In both those cases, what the court looked at is the relationship between the party giving consent, the location where the items are found, and then the items themselves. So I think the homeowner, by virtue of the fact that these devices were found in a bathroom used by her minor children, and in a bedroom belonging to one of her minor children, had a sufficient relationship under Matlock to consent to the search of those items. But I agree with Your Honor that there are a lot of the reasoning and case laws goes back and forth.
Is it did the evidentiary hearing on the motion to suppress also reflect that the daughter had already looked to see what was on the cards and told her mother this is what was on there?
That's correct. As to the card in her bedroom, Your Honor, she had
card in her bedroom. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So the mother already knew, and the officers arrived. The mother already knew what was on the cards.
Not only did she know from her daughter, but Mr. Menninger, as Judge Brasher alluded to, had told her too what his intent was with those.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. To answer some of the points made by the government, the cards did contain video footage from the house. We don't know what was on them until we look. The minor viewed just a tiny, tiny portion of the 192 gigabytes. There were an estimated 24 hours of footage on each card, and she viewed just a tiny, tiny portion. And so the rest of it could have been any manner of information. As the investigator testified, it can contain any type of documents. And specifically, I believe the warrant information said that as a rule of thumb, as many as 500,000 pages of documents could be contained on 1 gigabyte. And this is 192 gigabytes. So it could have contained any manner of personal information of Mr. Menninger. I would also point out that this is more than a box with a closed lid. This was not something that you could just take a peek at or open up to see what's in it. It's a card that was in two cards that were themselves inside cameras, so they had to be withdrawn from the cameras, and they can't just be examined on their own. They had to be placed in another device, which the minor one had. It's unclear which device in the household she placed them into, but she was able to view that footage by doing so. But the police, which is the relevant question here, the government intrusion into that privacy right, the police testified as to the elaborate nature of their investigation. They had to connect devices to a forensic computer through a write blocker using an FTK imager to create an image of the cards and then use a forensics axiom process. I'm not even sure what all of that means, but it was a very elaborate process over a couple of days. So this wasn't just an issue of peeking into a box. I also just want to make clear this isn't, there are lines of cases in which information was publicly available, for example, throwing something out in the garbage. This is not that. This was in a private home that he had been invited into.
What about the fact, I mean, I just keep going back to this. Is there any sense that he was invited into the daughter's bedroom, or like it seems like he's if the it seems like your strongest case would be if these were in the room that he was supposed to be in. It seems like the fact that they're in the bathroom and the daughter's bedroom, that's really the problem here for the reasonable expectation of privacy. What do you say about that?
Two things, Your Honor. One, it was established in the record by the testimony of SH that he had unrestricted access to the full home. So he was not doing anything, he was not in a place that he was not allowed to be. And certainly, while there is an inference that there was nefarious activity perhaps afoot, and in fact he testified, or he didn't testify,
right.
He conceded that he was filming the 18-year-old. However, that is fodder for a warrant. That is not a reason to simply go in and do the search without the warrant. There
yep.
are no exigent circumstances here to justify it. And I would point to the case of Walter versus United States, where the Supreme Court, under similar circumstances, a package was delivered to another a business. It was misdelivered. They opened the package, and it was evident from opening the package that it contained obscene materials. It was handed over to the police. They viewed the film. Again, not in a place where that person would have an expectation of privacy, clearly contained evidence of, you know, wrongdoing inside. And yet the court determined that he had an expectation of privacy, the owner of those films, and that the law enforcement officials should have gotten a warrant.
What do you say about the government's argument in kind of response to my issue about how the homeowner is the sort of the victim of the alleged crime here? Like, is it reasonable to expect that you can use a box to commit a crime against the homeowner and the homeowner isn't going to look inside that box? Do you have a reasonable expectation of privacy in something, you know, the idea of like, I can be a guest in your house and you're not going to raffle through my purse. I get that. But is it reasonable to say, well, look, I can be a guest in your house. I can set up secret recording devices in your house. And when you find those, you're not going to look at them. Is that, respond to that.
Again, I would say that the relevant question is not whether the family could look at them. They did live there. They could take a look at it anytime they want, and their intrusion into his privacy is not a Fourth Amendment matter. What matters is the government intrusion into it. And he had an expectation of privacy in all of the unseen areas of those cards. And all the police had to do, the correct procedure would have been to hold onto the cards and get a warrant. The evidence was secure. There were no urgent circumstances to require a look without a warrant. They got a warrant after the search, which they didn't start until 3 days after they confiscated the cards. And the warrant was labeled a backstop by Investigator Brian, but it should be the first stop. Evidence of the wrongdoing and the placement does not diminish that expectation as to government intrusion.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Our next case is